Welcome to Matt Bites, episode 18. I'm Mike Thomas, and I'm here with my co-host Elaine Giles. Well, we said we'd be back for another episode, and here we are. Must have been all the positive feedback that we got. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to Amanda and David. Thank you for the welcome back sentiments and your comments on the blog on the show notes. The software with the sensible licensing is going to be revealed later in the show, so please keep listening. And Lucy C, you made a comment about Big Ben, and I think that was in response to my comment last week about does it bong on the hour?
I do hope that's what it was in relation to.
Yeah, I think that was the subtitle of the show, wasn't it?
It was.
Well, the bad news is that this application called Big Ben, and the URL we'll put in the show notes, it does not bong on the hour.
Oh, well, what's the point of that then?
Well, and it's actually nothing to do with the iPhone app, Big Ben. What it is, it displays a window. It's for the Mac. It displays a window showing the current date and time in up to 12 cities around the world. You can actually select which cities you want, configure colours, order the list alphabetically or by GMT. But it doesn't bong on the hour.
Well, that's a showstopper for me. Don't bong on the hour. Not interested.
Yeah, well, it's not the kind of app that I think I'd use, but the name, obviously, Lucy picked up on and thought we might be interested in it. But just to let you know, there's a 30-day trial of it if anyone is interested in it, and it costs $10.
Paid for toys as well. Mm. Good grief.
Yeah.
But also this week, we had our Mac Bites Live. And we had a fantastic time. So big thanks to all who joined us. You managed to make WWDC even more enjoyable. It was great to share it with you. We even had Hearty Diamond partaking remotely with a somewhat diabolically dodgy mobile connection from Didcot. And that is not easy to say. I was updating him via Twitter. So we had a great time. And if you missed it, well, shame on you. Don't miss the next one. And talking of WWDC, yes, everybody's done WWDC to death. So I thought we'd do something different. Where we'd do the fastest roundup of WWDC news ever this week. So don't bother fast forwarding. I intend to be brief. Laptop updates. Nice. Won't be buying one. Perfectly good laptop already. Safari 4. Does Sir dress to the top or the bottom? Oh, big crisis. Snow Leopard, great pricing, £20 or £35 for a family licence. iPhone OS 3, want, will have, roll on next week. New iPhones, want, won't have, sobbing uncontrollably. Was that fast enough for everyone?
Yeah, it sums it up, doesn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. Obviously, we've got to go a little bit more detailed than just a few items, but everybody does a summary, don't they? And they do it to death, and can't be doing with it.
It makes you wonder why they took 2 hours over it.
Indeed. They should have just had me do it. Mm. And then we could have a big booze up. That would work nicely. But on to
iPhone.
Yeah, it was going to be great, wasn't it? The phone looked great, and everyone in the chat room was getting really excited. And then O2 came along and spoilt the upgrade party, sadly. There are options if you want to buy. Buying yourself out of your contract's a little bit expensive. So if you could possibly give your phone to a nice member of the family who'd be willing to assist you in a purchase of a new one, then that's probably the best way forward for everybody. I can't help thinking it's a shame you've already got one, Mike. I could have had you earmarked for that. And I'm sure you're thinking just the same.
Yeah, but I've enjoyed using my iPhone over the past, 8 months?
Yeah, so there's not much we can do about it. There is actually a very funny blog out there called o2fail.wordpress.com. I found it virtually straight away after WWDC and when the O2 Twitter went into meltdown. It's obviously put together by some people who aren't too happy with that O2's upgrade policy. And I looked at it the first day or so and I thought, I'm amazed O2 have let this be there. There was a sign, it actually looked like a pretty authentic O2 site. And at the top where it had O2 in the white and blue, it said rip off ahead. And I thought, O2 Legal are going to go mad with this. Anyway, I went back yesterday to have another look at it. And it's very plain now. It's very white and no O2 logos in sight. So it looks like O2 are actually looking at that one. So if you want to make a protest, that looks like that's the one to go and protest. So sadly, not looking like new iPhones at MacBytes HQ just yet. And then, of course, there was Safari 4 and the controversy over the location of the tabs. I remember when the beta came out, was I going mad or did I hear people complaining they were at the top?
I think people were voicing opinions, shall we say.
Indeed. But now they've put them back at the bottom. The other people who were happy with them at the top are now complaining. Can't please all of the people all of the time, can you? I'm not overly worried. It's actually taken me less time to get used to them back where they were. It took me a long time to get used to them back at the top, but there you go. Anyway, you can have your say because we've got a new poll on the MacBytes website. So go and vote now and let us know what you think. The interim results from the MacBytes Live on Monday were 60% wanted them returned to the top, 30% wanted them where they are at the bottom, and the other 30% wanted a choice. So top's looking popular, which I was surprised at.
Me, I'm not particularly fussed either way. I think it's just getting used to where they are, isn't it?
That's the thing. It becomes second nature and you're clicking in the wrong place. It did take me a long time to get used to them at the top. I think I just about got there, which is typical, isn't it? I think an option's the obvious way forward.
Yeah, it did take me a while to get used to the location, the refresh button.
That was another thing, they moved the little buttons. I mean, I know you can put buttons back and stuff wherever you want, but I don't like it cluttered, so I have it fairly simple as well. So moving things in a browser can take quite a while to get used to. I was actually more concerned about a couple of annoyances that I found on one of my machines, which seemed to be introduced by moving them back to the bottom. When I've only got a single page open in Safari on that particular Mac, I've got two options missing. I can't drag that web address. Now I can if I use the URL, but I can't. I've got no tab and I haven't got anywhere to grab it to dock it in another Safari window. I can use window merge all windows or whatever the option is. Let me have a look. Window merge all windows, yeah. But if I've got three windows open and I just want to merge two tabs into one, then I can't do that because I've got no way to drag it. And the other option that's missing, because you haven't got the tabs displaying at all, is that there's no new page icon, the plus button. So I pretty much use keyboard shortcuts, but I do actually like, not particularly the button there, how I get a new tab if I'm in mouse mode is I double click in the space next to the tab. And of course the space isn't there, so I can't do that. So that was really annoying me. But when I upgraded my MacBook Pro, which had never had Beta 4 on it, the tab bar is always displaying and so is the plus button. So it looks like, one, it's doable, but two, I can't see an option on my other Mac. So I don't know if it was running the Beta first that spoilt the party, but it looks like a trip to the terminal for me.
Techie.
I'm hoping it'll work. Backup, you know, first, I think.
I'd always use Command and T or Command and N to get a new page.
Well, I do, pretty much. It depends if my hand's on the mouse and where my other hand is. But we won't follow that any further.
I've never really noticed that plus sign, you know.
It was in a different place when it was at the top.
Yeah.
It was right in the top corner. So I didn't use it at all up there. But it's the space. If you've got Safari open now, if you just double click in that space next to one of the tabs, it gives you a new tab. And that is what I do when I'm in mouse mode. And obviously, if I've only got the one tab, I can't do that and I can't dock it. And it just makes it awkward and long-winded. But looking at it on the MacBook Pro, it's absolutely fine. So there must be an option somewhere, but I can't find it in the interface. So hence the terminal trip.
Yeah, I've still got the Safari 4 beta on this machine. I can see the plus in the top corner, but I think I was more intrigued by the little bug icon just underneath.
Oh, I took that away. I couldn't sit looking at that all day. I have very few icons. I really do. I pretty much can navigate everything with keyboard shortcuts. So the only icons I really tend to have is the web snapper icon and video box, and that's about it. I don't even need the forward and backward buttons, really. So I obviously took away a little bug icon. Didn't want that.
Talking of web snapper, you had an issue, didn't you?
Oh, I did, yes, but that turned out to be a false alarm. Mad panic that turned into a false alarm. It was actually VideoBox, which is another application from Tasty Apps, the people who make WebSnapper, that caused my problem. And what happened was I'd got the beta running, and the beta was running fine. So obviously I took a backup of everything and I downloaded. I did actually download the thing. I didn't run the software update. I downloaded the update to Safari. I installed it. Everything seemed to go well. Needed a reboot, so I rebooted. And people were saying at this point on Twitter, oh, you know, it's crashing for me. And there was about 50% saying it was crashing, and the other 50 saying, no, it's fine for me. So I thought, well, I'll give it a go anyway. And if I have to reinstall Flash or something, then I will do. I didn't get that far. I just got an error message that said it couldn't run at all. Luckily, it did give me a clue as to what the problem was. So I went off in hunt of this file that it was saying could be causing the problem. And the file was called Tasty App something. So I immediately thought of WebSnapper, because I can't use Safari without WebSnapper. So I immediately thought that was the problem. So I uninstalled WebSnapper, sobbing uncontrollably at the thought of losing it. And that didn't actually solve the problem. I had to go in even further and actually delete this file itself, not from one location but actually from two. And once I deleted it from both locations, it was fine. I actually managed to run Safari and do what I needed to do. So I put in a core support call to Tasty Apps and said, I can't live without my web snapper. Please, please, please tell me when it's going to be fixed. And they wrote back really quickly and said, it's not broken. It was actually VideoBox. They changed something in the release version which upset VideoBox. And they'd already put together a fix for it. So I re-downloaded the pair of them, uninstalled everything to do with Tasty Apps, reinstalled everything to do with Tasty Apps. Ah, and sanity and peace was restored. All my favourite apps. As I say, they're the only two buttons that I have in my browser. And I was really, really thrilled with that, because VideoBox now works better than the original version for me. I've now got a little download queue and I can download it from the browser. So a little bit of a problem for me to delete it in the first place. But they were really, really quick coming back to me. So I was really impressed with that. And I have had, when I mentioned this, I've had three direct messages and PMs from people saying, well, Why do you need this web snapper? What is wrong with little snapper, print a PDF, take a screenshot, delete as applicable? So I got lots and lots of suggestions, and all those methods are absolutely a perfectly valid way of creating a PDF. Where web snapper is different is it captures the entire page as it's displayed in the browser. So if there's a print CSS attached to it, which makes the printed page look very, very different from what you see in the browser, you don't have to worry about that, because WebSnapper is going to snap exactly what you see in the browser without paginating it, which can break it at inopportune moments, and with selectable text. So if you are snapping a serial number, you don't want it to be a picture where you've got to sit and type it in. You actually want to be able to select the text. And a web snapper snap makes the text selectable. But the biggie is it does all of that without re-requesting the page, which sounds, yeah, and. But it is critical when you're taking copies of pages, when you're buying stuff, because you cannot re-request the page without it complaining, saying you've already done this, or maybe even the worst case scenario, purchasing twice. It just doesn't work. So I use it virtually every day for that. Something tells me I buy a little bit too much online, but there you go. So I just can't use Safari without it. And I've been saying so since the very start of MacBytes. It is really just an excellent little application that I don't want to think about having to use Safari without. So it was brilliant news when within a couple of hours it was back on my toolbar where it belongs. So big thanks to Tasty Apps and their support people for sorting that out. And while I'm talking about things like that, also to the developers of Saft, which is the Safari plugin, which again, difficult to live without once you've tried it. And the biggie for everybody, Twitter went crazy. 1Password. 1Password stopped working for 10 minutes and the whole world ground to a halt. And again, they were both extremely quickly updated. And 1Password are absolutely fantastic at keeping folks updated via Twitter. And I really appreciate that. So the upgrade to Safari 4 could have been a tinge smoother, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been either. So did yours go okay?
Mine went okay. Yeah, I had no problems with WebSnapper. I did have a problem with the 1Password disappearing, but I upgraded to the newest version of 1Password and it came back. So all's well that ends well, as they say.
Exactly.
Just going back to WebSnapper, I think it's a great piece of software. Not only do I use it for, as you said, invoice pages, but I actually saved the entire thread, for want of a better word, of the WWDC the other night. It was one of the sites that had quite large photographs of the presentation. And on the back of your effective presentations presentation that you did the other week, I thought, it could give me some inspiration here for doing some slides. Now, obviously, it's a very, very long page because it was a 2-hour presentation. So I just used WebSnapper to create a PDF of that entire web page, because the whole of the WWDC was in one web page from start to end. With all the text commentary and the photographs.
Good stuff. Good use for it too.
Yeah. So yes, WebSnapper is definitely a piece of software that I would recommend.
Me too, but I think everybody knows that by now.
Yeah.
Official spokesperson for WebSnapper. Well, unofficial spokesperson. Happy user.
I don't know if they have anything equivalent for Windows.
I dread to think. Can't remember. I used to print out to Acrobat, so I don't know.
Nice little segue there onto our next little story. Something that I found this week. European buyers of Windows 7 will have to download and install a web browser for themselves. Bowing to European competition rules, Microsoft Windows 7 will ship without Internet Explorer. The company said it would make it easy for PC makers and users to get at and install the web browsing program. But I think there's a vicious
There's a logic
circle there.
problem there,
Yeah,
isn't there?
there's a logic
So
problem.
you need a browser. So you'll open your br You haven't got a browser.
Now, what did I say? You could install Firefox to get.
Yes, you could. You could, as long as you've got another machine to download it on, and then some way to get it on the machine that doesn't have a browser. You know what I reckon? You'll log in, and the first thing will be run Windows Update, and it installs IE. I know Microsoft.
That does sound likely, actually, doesn't it?
It does. It sounds more likely than Firefox automatically downloading, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about Europe, you know. I know they've got a bone of contention with Microsoft about Internet Explorer being a monopoly and all that. But I did a presentation on alternative browsers in 2004, and Firefox was a mere infant, and it had something like 1% of the market. And I updated this presentation in 2006, and they had a few more percent. They were doing all right. And I updated it again about 6 weeks ago, and I looked at the browser stats, and Firefox is now the dominant browser with 47%. So whether IE is installed or not, people have got the message, and they're not using it in the numbers they once were. So, a little bit behind Europe are as ever.
I've certainly noticed when I'm talking to people at work, not particularly my colleagues, but other people that come on courses, and I say, "What browser have you got?" Most of them do tend to say Firefox.
It's trendy, isn't it? It passed that niche element and became trendy. So, yeah, most people I know at least have it installed. It
Of
is the
course,
alternative on Windows, really.
I say Safari on a Mac.
Yes, then that causes major consternation. Although they've probably got Safari on Windows, because if they've got iTunes, they'll have surreptitiously probably acquired Safari and haven't got a clue it's there. And also this week, more news, Google's Quick Search Box was launched, somewhat overshadowed by WWDC, I feel. It was a much quieter launch, I suppose, because it had been out in beta. But Quick Search Box is a desktop interface to locate items on your Mac and/or the web in various ways. So, put another way, it's like Quicksilver or Launch Bar. So, I use Launch Bar.
And I use Quicksilver.
Well, I did use Quicksilver, but it never took too kindly to Leopard for me. And I already had a license for Launch Bar from a bundle, so I switched. But.
And I had to stick with Quicksilver so that we could have a comparison discussion on MacBytes.
Yeah, you keep telling yourself that. I know what you're like. You install something and it works and that'll do you. You don't start looking around for better.
If
because
it ain't
it works,
broke,
leave it.
Don't fix it.
Exactly. I know you.
And when it does break...
When it breaks, you come and see me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got it made, really, haven't you? Anyway, on to Quick Search Box and how it performs. Well, luckily the install was easy, but I don't install anything until I know how easy it is to uninstall. So my first trip was, okay, how does this install and does it uninstall? Anyway, luckily it is very easy to uninstall. I was wary because it isn't just a drag and drop to your apps folder. It's one of these where you open the DMG and it wants you to double click and actually run an installation, which always concerns me. So I ran AppZapper and confirmed, yep, there was only two files to remove. So I decided to install it and have a go with it. There was a sneaky preference turned on by default, which sends usage data back to Google. I'd like to see that turned off by default, but there you go, it's free and Google probably want your data. So what it does is its job's to search your system in locations that you specify in the preferences and act as an interface to Google and all its search options. So I had a go with it, and it certainly searches Google fast enough, but then so it should. One of the things I noticed was in the results, so I type in a word or a phrase, and it gives me a list of options straight away without opening a browser or anything else. A list of options pop up, which are search results pulled in from Google. And one of the things I noticed was that in those search results, there's no indication if the specific result is a sponsored result or not.
I didn't think of that, you know.
Well, I did, because if you remember, the Inquisitor commotion?
Vaguely, but I don't use Inquisitor, and I didn't use Inquisitor, so I remember you talking about it.
Inquisitors was a plugin for Safari. I think it's still out there. And instead of you using the Google box on the right hand top corner of your browser, Inquisitor took that over. And as you started typing, it came up with a list of results. So it made your searches very, very quick. But it turned out it's a free plugin. It turned out that some of the results that were coming up were generating funds for the developer. They were sponsored in some way. So he got carpeted for that, really. He got a lot of criticism. So what happened was when the new version came out, it clearly indicated which were sponsored links and which weren't. And there is no indication at all in here whether they're sponsored or not. And one of the search terms I typed in was for a site that is one of my own. And I pay for AdWords on it. So my site comes up in Google as a sponsored link, and it also comes up in various other locations who take funding from Google for showing adverts. And my site came up top of the list for my search term, as I would expect, but it gave me no indication whether if I clicked on that, you see, if I did it because I'm paying the bill for the AdWords, I'd be charged. And there was no indication whether that was sponsored or not. And I think that needs rectifying somewhat. Anyway, that was just one of the little things that I noticed. Go on.
I was going to explain a little bit about more about what this app does.
Feel free.
Well, at a simple level, you start typing an application name or a file name or a search term, and what it does is it anticipates what you want to do and then shows you a list, refining the list as you type more. So, for example, if I bring the box up and I type something in there, if it finds an application, it will list that. Or if it's if it thinks that you want to search out on Google, then it gives you an option to do that. Or it might find a file on your machine with the name or the text that you've started typing. Then you press enter, and depending on what you've selected, it will perform the appropriate operation.
Yeah, but the fun doesn't stop there. Just like Quicksilver and Launch Bar, you can use the right arrow to show additional options. So if you type an app name and then press the right arrow, you get a list of recently opened files. If you type a file name, you get options with the right arrow key to open in, or to show in large type, which is very, very Launch Bar-ish. If it was a search term and you use the right arrow, then you get options to open in, email, or again, show in large type.
Yeah, there's a lot of options there. And as we said, Quicksilver has a lot of those, but I've only ever used Quicksilver in a very simple way, just as an application launcher. And I've had a play with this one, with the Google one. I can see it's very, very useful.
You've come around to my way of thinking, is what you mean.
Exactly, yeah. Now, something else that I think is useful is, and I know you've got to then pick up the mouse and do this. Well, actually, no, you don't, because there's a little drop-down arrow to the right of the search box. But you can configure with the keyboard. There's some predefined configuration, command and zero through to command and seven. Things like Google Image Search, Gmail, Google News, Wikipedia, YouTube even there. So, for example, you type in a search term, you press command and one, or command and zero, and it goes away and it searches Google Image for any images that relate to that search term. You type in a search term, you press command and six, and it actually searches YouTube.
Oh, that's rather cool. A launch bar can do all that, and it does more, but then you'd expect that because it's a paid for app. You can copy files and move files. You can actually bring something up in launch bar and use command and I. You can use quick look. So there's a few extra options there. But having covered the basics, we didn't leave it there, did we? We delved deeper on your behalf, dear listener.
We certainly did. One of the things that we found was that when you bring it up, when you launch the application, it only remembers what you've typed in for the first level. As we've already explained, you can go deeper down.
Yeah, when you use Launch Bar, let's say you type in an application name, so I type in TextMate, and I then use the right arrow key, it gives me a list of the recently opened files that I've opened in TextMate. If I then want to open one of those files, if I just open that file, then the next time I bring up Launch Bar, it will still have that file listed. So if I've closed it and then think, oh no, I've got another change to make, I don't have to go through the rigmarole of typing everything in. Launch Bar will remember that. And it won't just remember that it was TextMate, it will actually remember the file that I had open. But I can also do extra things with it as well. So if I use the TextMate shortcut, use the right arrow key, and I get that list of files, I can then press the Tab key and get a whole different list of applications. So I can choose to open the same file in a different application as well. And it remembers all of that, which this one didn't seem to, did it? It just seemed to be one level.
That's right. I actually tried as well searching for the Internet Movie Database. According to the instructions that I read, if you typed in IMDb followed by somebody's name, it should actually take you to the Internet Movie Database, but it just kept taking me to Google. So I think a little bit more research is needed on that one.
Usually you have to put something after it. I was going to say, what you can do with Launch Bar is it does remember everything, and it can remember it on multiple levels. You can maybe type a calculation in it. It's got its own built-in calculator. And even if you run several applications after that, you can return to your calculation. It remembers that because you access things with different shortcuts. So maybe with the Internet Movie Database thing, you need a comma or a full stop or a space bar or something, because Launch Bar would do that, but it needed training. Initially, it insisted that I go visit the Internet Movie Database. So what I got was a link to it. But after I typed it in a few times, it got the idea, and it presented me with, I typed IMDb, pressed the space bar, and I got a text box where I could type in the person's name. Now I've done that a few times, that's now the default. So it did learn, and it learned fairly quickly.
It'll even search the dictionary as well, which I believe that Launch Bar does, but this seems to take a couple of extra steps. So you can type dictionary, or I think you can get away with dict, followed by the word that you're looking for, and then it will bring back the dictionary, but it won't necessarily be at the top of the list, so you might have to move down a couple of entries with the down arrow key.
I'd imagine if it works similar to Launch Bar, that eventually that will come up towards the top of the list.
Yeah, it kind of learns, doesn't it, as it goes along?
It does. I found with the dictionary, I do the same as that. I type dict and then space and then type a word in, and it opens the dictionary. And I'm pretty nifty with the shortcut keys, so I can actually use all the other options in the dictionary as well, with my hands never leaving the keyboard. Another option you can do, you can, and I use this all the time with you, when I'm sending an email, instead of going to mail and command an N and getting a new mail and then having to type your name in, I use Launch Bar for it. I just use my Launch Bar shortcut key, start typing Mike, it immediately comes up with your name. I use the right arrow key, choose the which email address I want, press enter, and I've got a perfectly addressed email template, and my the focus is on the subject line, so I can just type the subject and away. You can also browse address book entries if you're looking for somebody. It's got iTunes browsing, and you can browse volumes as well. Now, Launch Bar browses your hard drives very, very easily. I think you tried it, didn't you, in the Google one, and it's not quite as easy.
It's not, no. A few more steps are needed.
Yeah, what was happening for me was it was very fast, and again, it remembered where you were. So if you're working with files sort of 8 levels down on an external drive, it will remember where you were as you work through them. But I know you were getting, it wasn't actually showing you all the folders, was
no,
it?
No, I think it showed the first half dozen folders, and then I had to choose a more option to see all the other folders on that drive.
So it's not bad. Well, it is free, so it's not bad. It's getting there. The things it didn't do that I found Launch Bar did. Launch Bar's brilliant for browsing your Safari history. Just type in SH and you'll see Safari history listed. And use the right arrow key there and you get a beautifully organised taxonomy of all your history entries in Safari. And you can search Spotlight from there as well, which means, you know, for those who like keyboards like me, you don't have to take your hand off and go over to the mouse and click the little icon in the top right. You can actually do it from within Launch Bar. So that worked well as well. So, but I think it was certainly worth me taking a look at it, even though I probably wouldn't switch to it, because I always tend to try and put something similar on Macs that I have to use without Launch Bar. So my father doesn't have Launch Bar. We put Quicksilver on his and it is working all right for him. But I think I might swap him to this one because I think this is worth it. And of course, comparing it with Launch Bar means that I found out some more useful stuff about Launch Bar that I'd either forgotten or never actually knew. And you can never know too much about your software, can you?
You certainly can't. You know, I think I might actually swap to this because, as I said before, I've only really used Quicksilver just as a launcher, and this does seem to give you a lot more options.
There you go, a convert. It was worth us taking a look then, wasn't it?
Maybe you'll convert me to Launch Bar.
In the end, give me a little bit longer.
Anyway, if you can't do without a launcher, something else in the must-have stakes is a clipboard extender, and I should know.
You should, because you're not allowed one at work, are you?
No, they don't give me any good toys.
No.
So if I copy something and I know I'm going to be using it later on, I tend to have to open a copy of Notepad or Word or something like that and paste it in there.
And then, how primitive.
Then make sure I save it in case I have a system crash.
Do you mean when you have a system
crash?
When
I have a system crash. There is, of course, the Microsoft Office clipboard manager.
Oh, no. No, no.
Yes, yes.
That was hideous. Is it still there?
It's still there. And in Office 2007, you can now store up to 24 items.
Wow. Dear, dear me. That's just pathetic, to be honest. When I was on Windows, I used the ultimate in clipboard extenders called Clipmate, and I know you did as well.
Mm.
That really did set the standard. It was an amazing piece of software. Been around for ages. I think it first came out in 1991, and it was one of these apps that was really solid and reliable. I don't think I ever really had it crash. The storage of the clips, so instead of just sort of saving, like you're saying, 24, this thing, you could just keep shoving them in, as many as you like. They changed the storage system many years ago when I was still on Windows, and it's database based. So there's no slowdown, even if you've got thousands of clips, and that includes graphics as well. So, and because it's in a database, you can literally run SQL queries on it to try and find your clip. So that is it's just a brilliant, brilliant thing. It even had shortcuts to frequently used clips. So I used to use that instead of something like Text Expander or Typinator. It was built in there. One of the things I used a lot was where I could reformat the clips before I pasted them in. So if I'd copied it out of a Word document, and I wanted to paste it somewhere, but I didn't want all the formatting coming with it, I could strip that out and paste it as plain text. I could change the case on it and all sorts of things. One of the things I used a lot was it's a trademark term to Clipmate called power paste, and you could choose a clip in your list and then say paste up from here or paste down from here, and every time you paste it in, instead of getting a copy of the same clip, it moved down one or it moved up one. And it was brilliant for filling forms in. I think you used it for that as well.
I did,
didn't you?
Yeah, that was one of the things I did use it for.
I used to build separate little clipboards for logins for that. Obviously, this was a pre-RoboForm and 1Password. And for long things, when you're registering for a conference and they want the same information 20 times, it was brilliant for that. Even had integrated screen capture, and you could share these clips on a network. The interface was pretty amazing as well. You didn't have to... you weren't stuck with like just an icon. You could choose whether you had an icon, a small window, a large window. There was a clip management view. There was integrated backup. It just was the definitive clipboard extender for Windows. And I checked it out because obviously I've not been on Windows for some considerable time. It's still there. It's from a company called Thornsoft. And I was thinking, I wonder when this was actually released, because I've used it sort of on Windows forever. And there's a really good page on their website, so I'll put a link in the show notes to the Clipmate story. And it goes right back to this guy being in college and how he started. So well worth a read. But that's Windows.
You know, you were so enthusiastic there. You were so enthusiastic there that anyone would think that you'd want to go back to it.
I know. Do you know, I was looking at it, I was thinking, this is what you call a clipboard extender.
Yes, but it comes with a baggage that's known as Windows.
I know. What I want is Clipmate for the Mac. Mm. And when you go to the site, it says, sorry, but we don't program for the Mac. And if you want to, you know, if you're on the Mac, try this one. And I looked at it and thought, oh, here's the one that's similar. And it was one I'd already tried. And I was incredibly disappointed. Yes, I was getting rather misty-eyed there. Forget that. No, because with it, I'd have a great clipboard extender and nothing else would work. So, yes, I'm going to have to forget that. But when I moved to a Mac, I tried... lots of them. First of all, I tried Shadow Clipboard, really because it was the first one that I found. And at the time, I wasn't intending to move to a Mac. So it was the first one I found. They had a great deal on for multiple licenses, and it worked well. So while I got up to speed on the Mac, that was just what I used. But as soon as I moved to a Mac permanently, I started dreaming of Clipmate for the Mac, and I've never really got over it. It began a fruitless search. I had a look at Shadow Clipboard again, and there's been no updates for 2.5 years, which is never a good sign with software, is it?
It's not. It makes you wonder if the person's still developing it, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the site's still there, and the site itself has been updated for 2009, but there's no word on the forums. Some of the posts go back to 2006, and there's been nothing since. So,
and there's nothing wrong with old software, but... obviously, as Leopard comes out, Snow Leopard comes out, you've got to wonder if it's supported.
Exactly. I like software that is, you know, that I've at least got a chance will be continued to be developed for a few months at least, which gives me time to try something else if I need to. I moved on from that to iClip, which I think we got in a bundle, and it was in beta at the time. It's got a beautiful interface, and there's even a free light version. And the developer's website's also incredibly pretty. It was just very slow to load for me. The thing is with it, it is beautiful to look at, but it's just too fiddly for me to use. I need something with the power that Clipmate's got. I want to be able to search through clips quickly. I prefer to be able to do it with just keyboard shortcuts. You know, yes, they're beautiful, but if they're not fast enough to use, I'm not going to use them. So I moved on from that to Copy Paste Pro, which I stuck with for quite a while, I think. It's got some nice options to create short URLs. So if you copy a long URL, you can work some magic with it and paste in a short one. So it obviously pings out to tiny URL and makes a short one. You could also edit the clips as well. It had Bean integrated with it. You know the free word processor? There's a special version of Bean integrated. But I know you had problems with that, because if you upgrade Bean... and you've got Copy Paste Pro on, then Copy Paste Pro gets upset because it's the wrong version of Bean. And I don't think that's particularly clever. I found it powerful and solid, but I know you didn't.
I didn't find it solid. I found it was crashing regularly. I think it was to do with Pathfinder.
Well, I had Pathfinder installed and it didn't crash for me, so it's just one of those odd things, isn't it?
Yeah, so in the
Because
end,
Quicksilver works perfectly for you and it doesn't work for me.
I actually uninstalled it and I found another one.
Well, in between you fight going from copy paste pro to what you're with now, I tried two more. Oh, I'm nothing if not game for these things. I tried one called Corkboard, which again, beautiful Mac-esque interface. From memory, it was slightly different to being just a clipboard extender, but I didn't stay with it too long. Probably again, I just want to use the keyboard and for speed really, and the interface got in the way. It didn't help. I did have high hopes for one called Clips, which had an excellent interface. I thought when I saw it, this could be the one. This could be Clipmate for the Mac. It's got a library type interface. If you think of iPhoto or iTunes, it is like that for your clipboard. It supports spaces, so if you're working in a particular space, it can isolate what you've copied in that space. So I really did have high hopes. It could also isolate by application. You could flag certain clips. You could put abbreviations in for them. So again, sort of text expandery things. And there was multiple interface options. You could have this library view. You could have it displaying in the menu bar. There was a bar that went down the side of your screen. So all good so far. But then there was this wheel. And this wheel covered your entire screen and showed you all you'd clipped in circular fashion. And of course, the bottom half were upside down. I did think the wheel was taking it a tinge too far. What killed it for me was it was a new product, so there were a few gotchas with it. But it's an activated license, and although the developer says you can install it on two Macs, I didn't find that worked too well. Because it did need to contact its home base and activate itself. And I'm not a fan, as everybody should know by now, of activated software. There is only me here. The fact that I have multiple Macs should not impact my licenses. There is only me using it. So I'm not fond of that kind of software. And then my license failed. So even worse. So I think from that I moved on to the one that you're using, which is PTH pasteboard, isn't it?
I like PTH pasteboard, but for me, my requirements are fairly simple. I really just want to be able to have an application where I can copy something, and I can copy lots of things, and have them available for later use, even if it's days or maybe weeks later. And obviously, that depends how much copying and pasting I've been doing in between. But what PTH pasteboard does is it sticks a little icon into the menu bar, and you can actually configure what the icon looks like. At the moment, I've got it as a little pin, but you can have different icons. And every time you copy something from any application, and it can be text, it can be a graphic. Do the ones that you've talked about allow you to paste allow you to copy graphics?
Yep, I think all of them do that.
Yeah, so it can be text, it can be a graphic. It will store whatever you've copied into the normal system-wide clipboard, but it will also store it in the PTH pasteboard clipboard database. You can configure it so you can store. I've got it set to storing 100 items, but you can configure it for more or less. It's got options like remember items after a restart, which of course your normal clipboard it will disappear. You can get it to ignore items from different programs. So I've got it set to ignore items from 1Password, Password Wallet, and the keychain, because you probably wouldn't want stuff copied and stored visible. Even if you're the only one using the machine, you wouldn't really want that information visible. You can have multiple pasteboards as well. I think you mentioned one of yours. You can have multiple pasteboards or clipboards.
Yep.
So you can configure different clipboards, different pasteboards as they call them, for different things. It also has a filter on it as well. So you can do things like uppercase, lowercase, or proper case. If you wanted to paste something which originally was all in lowercase and you wanted it to be in uppercase, then you can just apply what they call a filter. And you can also use the filter for pasting unformatted text. So if the original had been formatted, say, as bold, italic, and underline, you can actually just paste it as plain text. You can also assign hotkeys. So this allows you to assign hotkeys so you can just paste it as unformatted text, paste the last thing that was copied as unformatted text, or even bring up the window that lists all the items that you've copied and choose the one that you want to paste. So that there's hotkey combinations that you can assign to those. And you can sync it across multiple Macs as well. Now, before you start getting giddy over the price and the registration options, particularly with the syncing, and you're thinking you might have to pay it for multiple licenses, you can get a demo serial number, which is only valid on the machine which it's issued on. But if you want to try out syncing, then you need to request a demo serial number on each machine that you want to synchronize. However, if you do purchase the Pro version, and that is $25, purchase serial numbers are valid on multiple machines.
Ah, sensible licensing.
Yes, another sensible licensing policy.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, so that is PTH Pasteboard. That is my current one, and that is one that I do like. And I have found actually that, as I say, I can scroll down the list, and maybe I don't do a lot of copying and pasting, although I like to think I do, but I've got things on here from maybe a couple of weeks ago.
You clearly don't copy and paste as much as me.
No.
I struggle for mine to last more than a couple of hours.
Now, you've got a real favourite one, haven't you?
I do. I did try PTH Pasteboard, and listening to you talk about it now, it would seem that that would probably do pretty much what I wanted it to do. I think my problem with it was it needed a lot of hand-holding and configuration to get it to that level. And I was a bit wary at that stage, that being about clipboard extender number 27 that I was trying, to waste all that time configuring it all to then say, no, actually, it doesn't do what I want it to do. Then another one came out. Yes, another one, and I tried the beta of it. It's called Stuff with one F, Stuf, from a company called The Escapers. And I looked at it and I thought, can't see this one suiting me. It looks, when you're using it, pretty much like a heads-up display from one of the Pro apps. So it's sort of a greyish, a blacky grey colour. And it doesn't look like it does much. It's very deceptive because it pretty much does everything I want it to do. It does the job. So I've got multiple clipboard clips. So that's the first thing. It's also got integrated Quick Look, which is more use than it sounds, because if you think about how your clips display on applications with a list or a drop-down menu from the menu bar, you can only tend to see the first line, and you might be looking for whole paragraphs of text. So what you can do in Stuff is you can use a hotkey to show you the window. You can then use your arrow keys to move up and down. When you find the one you think you want, press the space bar and it gives you a quick look at that. Now, I find that is really useful. You can also navigate the entire clipboard just with keystrokes, and that's where it got me. I thought, oh, I do want to do. I don't like clicking the menu and bringing the thing up and hovering around because it just disturbs me when I'm working. I want it to be integrated with how I work. So I just press a key. I've got F19 to do that. Press a key, bring it up, navigate to the one I want, press enter. That's it. It hides the window, it pastes it in wherever I was, and I carry on working. So it's very, very integrated with your workflow. You can have an option to paste as plain text, and that is really important for me. I don't know why I seem to copy text from places, and when I come to paste it in, I've got all sorts of weird formats on it. So again, I can do that, and I don't have to set an option anywhere. It's a keyboard shortcut that I can use. Just go and find the clip, and then instead of pressing enter to paste it, it's just command and T, and it pastes it in as plain text. There are multiple clipboards, so you can have different clipboards for different situations, and organise yourself that way. There's network sharing included, and I've got that working a couple of times. And you'll think, a couple of times? Yeah, I should only really have to do it once. I don't know why it won't seem to stay connected. It does work, but I've not had much luck keeping these things connected. But when it works brilliantly. So I'd like to see that a little bit more stable. But best of all, and this was the application that I was talking about last week, and I couldn't remember which one it was. This is the one with the sensible licensing, pretty much like PTH Pasteboard. The even better news is this one's even cheaper. Their licensing, and this is a quote from on their blog. Somebody asked the question on their blog, said they were getting a MacBook and they'd already got the license on the desktop, and would they have to buy another one? And the answer came back that they have one license per user or one license per computer, whichever is the lower number. Now, that is what I call a sensible licensing policy. So when I saw that, I thought I can work with these people. And it's only £12.99, which I think is very, very good for what you're getting. You've got it's one of the few I've seen with integrated search. So I can actually search across my multiple clipboards, which I've not seen in too many others. So that's the one I'm using at the moment. I'm always open to suggestions. No, not lewd ones. So if anybody's got any other ones that they'd like to recommend, feel free to let us know, because I will try them and give you my opinion. But that's the one I'm using at the moment. And I'd like to commend them for their sensible licensing. I can work with companies with sensible licensing policies. So I know you've not tried that one, have you?
No, I haven't. But I think we've given a comprehensive roundup there, haven't we, of what, five or six different ones?
Yeah. Oh, yes, it was my history of clipboard extending on a Mac. And that's where I'm up to at the moment. I would still like Clipmate, even after all that. And just looking at the Clipmate website and looking at all the features in it, I'd say to the people who make stuff or PTH Pasteboard, please look at the options and think about making Mac applications as powerful
Windows.
As that Windows one. No,
Windows.
No, don't. No. But I just want the power that I used to have. I've noticed on the Mac ones, and it seems to be across the board, 20 clips. I mean, 20 clips. That's going to last me 2 minutes. What do you mean, 20 clips? Like we said, Clipmate, thousands. It's a database. You can store everything for 6 months if you want. And it didn't slow down. But on the Mac, there's this kind of... I get the impression that the aesthetics seem to be far more important than the actual functionality of the thing. And yes, I like things to look nice too. But I'd like something with a little bit more power. If the Mac's going to be taken seriously as a business machine, it needs to have really powerful software on it. And I'd like to try something that can handle thousands of clips and stuff like that. So let's tempt these developers into making the software even better. Because the one thing I will say is the only thing about Clipmate that I never really did get along with was the icon. Do you remember the icon?
I don't, actually.
It was a clipboard with like lines on it, but it was very... Once you got to XP and Vista with all their snazzy icons, this icon started to look quite out of place. But apart from the icon, if the icon's the only thing I can find wrong with it, then it's a good piece of software. So the Mac stuff's very pretty, but it, when you look at it, it just doesn't seem to have the power. So yes, a roundup of clipboard extenders. So we'd love to hear which one you use. You do use one, don't you? Can anybody manage with just one clipboard? One clip that you can save? Surely not. So let us know.
Shall we move on to the feedback?
Why not?
We have had some feedback. So I'd like to say again, thank you for all the positive feedback we've had. Very much appreciated. And I believe you've got some catching up to do.
Catching up on humble pie. Yes, in the vein of playing catch up from our little hiatus, I'd previously mentioned not seeing the point of an iPhone application called Koi Pond. Oh dear, talk about opening a can of worms. I soon had the Koi Pond Mafia on my tail.
Hi Elaine and Mike, Jane from the GalacticStrings.com website. On your last episode of Mac Bites, you talked about various iPhone apps, including the Koi Pond app, which, Elaine, you said you just didn't get. So I'm here to defend this wonderfully relaxing iPhone application. Why, oh why, you asked, would anyone want this app? Well, because it's pretty to look at. shows off the iPhone's gorgeous multi-touch screen. You can watch little virtual koi fish swimming around a pool and dodging your fingers as you tap the screen. And OK, it doesn't continue to thrill for too long, but it can raise a grin for a minute or two. OK, so I'm just easily pleased when it comes to iPhone apps. But then, as well as this visual screen delight, there's the sounds of chirping crickets, ribbiting frogs and twittering birds in the background. Use your imagination and let these sounds transport you to a tranquil paradise where the sounds of your hand dragging through the water in the koi pond add to the relaxing atmosphere as you sip your glass of wine on a warm, balmy evening alongside the pool. Then, when you're bored of that, shake the iPhone vigorously to drop food into the pool, which the fish will seek out and consume. And wait, there's more! Hold your finger on the screen for about 5 seconds, and the fishies will all swim towards you. Yay, isn't that great? Well, yeah, okay, all a bit over the top there. But the koi pond is just a bit of fun, and that's what these apps are all about. Now, on to a more serious matter. Hi, my name's Jane, and I'm addicted to the iPhone. Yes, I too go to sleep with my iPhone, and the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning is check my emails and read the overnight Twitters. So, Elaine, you're not the only one cursed with this addiction. Well, that's my 2 pennyworth worth, so I'm off to sit in the Australian sunshine, even though it's still winter here, and listen to relaxing sounds from the koi pond on my iPhone. Cheers and see you later.
So, that was me told. And then, of course, there was the Christmas koi pond special, with fairy lights around the pond. Yeah. Never again shall I be so rash as to rile the koi ponders. My humble apologies to all the koi ponders.
I'm sure they'll accept your apology.
Yeah, I'm not going to rile them again. Good grief.
We have an event to tell you about as well. 25th of June, which is a couple of weeks, just under a couple of weeks. We're running a seminar, a presentation on Documents Extreme Makeover, how to take a boring, plain document and make it look super duper.
Do you mean sexing up documents?
Sexing, yeah. Can we say sexing up documents and keep our clean tag?
Yes.
Okay.
I've decided.
Anyway, you can come along and attend this presentation. It's online and you can get to it by going to macbytes.co.uk/live. It starts at 8 o'clock in the evening at British Summer Time. All are welcome. And we stick around for an online chat afterwards.
So, we can't get away afterwards. We have a whale of a time chatting afterwards.
We do.
The chat afterwards is actually better than the presentation, and considering I'm giving the presentation, that's saying something.
I'm glad I didn't say that.
Indeed.
Well, that's another episode of MacBytes in the can. So thanks for listening. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. Leave us some feedback on the website, macbytes.co.uk. Contact us via email on macbytesuk@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter. twitter.com/MacBytes. So until next time, it's Elaine and Mike signing off.
See you next time.
Bye.